No, that's fine. I'm just reading. Apparently, Snoop Dogg has already moved here.
Shit.
Apparently, okay. Yeah, no, Drake has yet to respond as to whether or not he can shack up with there or what. Hello and welcome to I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside, a show that boldly went upstairs once, didn't like it much, and went back to its basement and threw an extra blanket around itself, and just watched funny YouTube videos. There's this great one of like a bulldog puppy getting a new memory foam bed, and he just hops and rolls. That is a good one. I'll link it. My name is Scott.
I'm Dan.
All right, and we're running light, and we'll probably run a short episode tonight. But yeah, no business. Thanks to anyone and everyone who donated to me or Sam on Extra Life. Those donations are still open until the end of the calendar year. So if you've got a few bucks kicking around at the end and need a handy tax write off, you know. 20 bucks for children's hospitals ain't a bad way to go, but otherwise, no new business, no old business, so let's just do pick of the week. What you got, Dan?
I'm going with the bone to pick. So it is now November 9th, day after the election. I am so sorry, world. We did our damnedest, but apparently Trump can fail upwards, and it's I'm not looking forward to the next 4 years. It's going to be tough, and I am so sorry for this.
Okay, so we are ostensibly apolitical and a-religious as a show just because we want everyone to come in and say, hey, whatever we have to say is, you know, worthwhile to one extent or another, regardless of broader opinions. But we've expressed opinions about people plenty of times. And regardless of whatever fuckface Von Clownsteak's political agenda is, he's just an asshole. And you can't sue me for that. That's not libel. I could call you an asshole all day. I checked.
I'll say it like I've said it to all my Facebook friends. I'll respect the office of the President of the United States. I will not respect Donald Trump.
There we are. So that's that. Fuck that guy. So my pick of the week is going to Titanfall 2. I finished the single player. It's pretty good. I enjoyed it. I got to dig into the multiplayer. I've heard good things about just bouncing around and being a guy with a butt rocket pack.
I'll join you on PS4 come Black Friday. I'm just saving up to move out right now. So
oh, yeah, get your nickels together. I gotta make a point of buying some PlayStation Plus time anyhow. But yeah, I enjoyed the single player. I liked that. It was, you know, it was more than I expect of a first person shooter single player campaign in this decade, which is, you know, I mean, it's not as good as say New Doom or New Wolfenstein, but it was just like, hey, It's a boy and his dog, and they did a good job of shaking up the mechanics every section. And I spent the whole game convinced that the guy playing BT was Peter Cullen, and then was surprised to learn that it was not Peter Cullen. He's got a remarkable Optimus Prime impression. Either that, or they stole that particular EQ setting from the Transformers movie. I don't know which.
Well, I enjoyed the Robo Dog moment. The multiplayer is kind of fun because it kind of, as much as I played Overwatch, it kind of creeps me out when the Ronin AI kicks in and you just hear the Reaper.
Yeah, I mean there is that limit of, you know, there are only so many voice actors working right now. And you're just going to hear people this over and over again.
Yep. Oh, yeah, my favorite section, time travel portal.
Oh, well, okay, so it's... Okay, so the time travel bit, I mean, we've seen a billion games do Light World, Dark World as a mechanic for solving puzzles. It's the first time I've seen it done with a first-person shooter or a platformer. And by God, that was great. That was great. I'm going to time travel to walk behind these losers and shoot them to bits.
Or holy crap, that giant lizard dog thing's about to bite my face off. Time travel away. Oh, shit.
Oh, these guys have grenades. I think I want the lizard thing back. And just the platforming bits were great, too. Just tapping the button mid-jump to be like, okay, I'm okay, I'm okay. Just while running, not going to fall to my death, and click, okay, I'm good. That's what I've got. Titanfall 2, it's pretty good. Poke me if you want. If you want to get together for a game night, just leave a comment in the episode, and you know we'll try to add everyone on PlayStation Network and fart around a bit. If you're not too busy with Battlefield 1, I guess.
Yeah, they could have picked a better release.
Well, I think. Well, it's weird because I think it's almost semi-smart because EA got two big releases sandwiched around COD number 1 billion, where...
I will say this about Infinite Warfare. The single player is great. Multiplayer's yet again, like, the third rehash of Advanced Warfare.
Yeah, well, and that's it, right? Like, there's something to be said for saying, okay... We're going to do Battlefield, which is big and crazy and multiplayer, and then we're going to have this fast sci-fi game, and between the two of them, we'll earn our money and take a bite out of the Activision final quarter thing. And there's an odd sense to EA, and I don't think they'd have pursued it if they didn't have a sincere thought that it would work. And I mean, I've not been hearing any, like, serious complaints about numbers from either franchise, whereas COD is still flagging, like, still dropping off every year.
Well, from what I've heard, this is, like, at least physical sales-wise, this is their worst year ever.
Really? Like, even with the fancy box that gets you the one everyone actually wants?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The thing for me is, like, I went to the midnight release. I was off the following day. I didn't have work, so I was in town, went to my favorite Best Buy, checked out what time they were doing, getting in line and everything, and then I try to do the midnight releases, I try to get in line about 9-ish. At least that's how I used to before, you know, I got a job and adult responsibilities.
Or at least somewhere to be before noon the next, on a Tuesday, right?
Yeah. But then I got there. I was the second person in line at 11 o'clock. And then when we got in line and everything, like, there were maybe 12 of us.
Yeah. See, I used to work late. I used to work nights, so I'd get off work at 11 and have enough time to scoot over to a midnight release and be at the back of the line for something. Now I just preload it on Steam because I'm old. And then I wait 2 days for the patch and the server load to stabilize anyhow, because I'm sensible. This is life now. Life has made me a cynical, dried-up old man who can't be excited for that brand-new game moment anymore. It is rough. This is what time does to us all.
And makes us grumpy old men.
Speaking of grumpy old men, let's talk about a new Star Trek movie. So this is So Star Trek Beyond came out. It's got some, it's still J.J. Abrams' team, but with new writers, better writers, and, you know, new director. But, alright, so here's my thesis on Star Trek. So, a couple of critics told Gene Roddenberry in around 1970, let's say, after the show was truly buried, they sat down and said to Gene, hey, you were really progressive and utopian and had this really high-minded cerebral show on network television in the 60s, and that was cool. And he ran around saying that he was some sort of visionary. He spent decades saying that, you know, he drank his own Kool-Aid and spent decades saying that he was the guy that foresaw a bright future for all mankind. And Star Trek was always about expressing something big and hopeful. And the fandom drank that Kool-Aid too. And they have spent ever since then saying they're the smart show. They are, you know, they are the smarter, higher-minded show, when I guess, you know, Star Wars is just about magic bullshit and Stargate is really uncomfortable when you actually break down the fact that it's like, oh, it's the U.S. military going to places tied to Middle Eastern mythology and imposing their will on it. That's not a weird allegory for anything ever, no. I mean, it helps that all the alien worlds look like Vancouver, because, you know, it's Vancouver.
Budget.
You know, you gotta save money somewhere. but that's it. The fandom has kind of convinced themselves that this is always the smart show. And you know what? I'm not gonna disagree that there were some incredibly smart, incredibly, you know, meaningful episodes of the original series. And I think TNG, took some of those ideas and really advanced them. Like, things like Drumhead and Measure of a Man are poignant and really have a lot of impact in a couple of different social ideas. They're wonderful. But for all of that, there's also, you know, And the Children Shall Lead Them and Spock's Brain and Amok Time and that one where Kirk dropkicks a man dressed like a lizard. What I'm saying is this, it was a serialized television show, and they had a lot of good sci-fi writers on it, and when Gene let them be good sci-fi writers, they churned out good stuff. But for the most part, it was just this ensemble procedural show where the Enterprise showed up somewhere, and something was weird, and maybe they fixed it, and maybe Kirk got laid.
Yeah. And what really... 9 times out of 10, they'd show up, encounter a problem in the first 5 minutes... spend 40 minutes trying to figure out problem, and then leave in the next 5 like nothing had happened.
Yeah, like that's it. Like there was a pretty strict formula, and what made it work, what made it stick, was that you had a bunch of well-acted characters that were fun to watch every week. Like it watching Bones and Spock bicker is fun every week. It doesn't matter what the episode's about, just seeing DeForest Kelly cuss someone out is great to watch. And Star Trek Beyond, after 3 kicks at this particular can, nailed that. It put the characters first. It said, hey, these are a bunch of guys who are having crazy space adventures, and they're likable, and they like each other, and let's, you know, maybe make that the tension. The tension is that these guys might, not that they're gonna die, but when this is done, they're not going to have space adventures anymore. And the plot conspires to remind them why they need to be space adventuring together. And there's a big dumb villain with a big dumb contrived plot device weapon that doesn't make... And the plan for it doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. And
yeah.
But guess what? At the end of it, they're all like, yeah, we're going to hop in a spaceship and go out there again. And that's what makes it work. It's just you. It reminds you why you like these guys. It has them run around shooting things and question whether or not they should be running around some more. And at the end of it, they're like, okay, let's do this again. And I'm eager to see them do it again.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Like, it was so nice that the ensemble actually felt like an ensemble this time. In the like, previous two movies, it always felt thing. Like it was just... Yeah, everybody got a moment to shine. I mean, in the previous two movies, it kind of just felt like the Spock and Kirk show, especially in 2.
Oh, 2, it was definitely a Spock and Kirk show. And, you know, this is a problem with a lot of Trek movies. Like, did Chekhov ever get a bit, ever, in the first 6?
Nuclear whistles?
Yeah, okay, Star Trek 4, that was it, right? Star Trek 4 was his moment. Well, What was Scotty's? Serger and a torpedo? Yeah, his would have been in six. I don't think Uhura got one, because we're going to pretend five didn't happen. Five didn't happen. She didn't get anything. And, who's left? Bones got to have Spock's brain in him. That was his bit. And that leaves us with...
Kirk and Spock, who they had a fair number between all the different movies.
Yeah, that it's just the Kirk and or Spock show, depending on the movie, right?
Yep.
Oh, Sulu gets a bit in six as well.
Oh, yes.
That's it. Six is the best one.
Explosion and fire.
Six might be the best one, because everyone gets a bit, except for Chekhov, I guess.
Well, he kind of did get a bit. The whole, if the shoe fits, wear it.
Ah, yeah. But there we go.
But no, like, this movie, it felt like the cast becoming their characters and playing to those characters' strengths. Kirk, when they crash land on the planet, McCoy does field surgery to try to close up Spock's wound when he doesn't have a med kit. Like, so he phasers a piece of metal and then sticks it in there to cauterize it.
I'm just going to burn all this shut. Hold still. I got this figured.
even though the Kirk or the Spock Uhura relationship was really dumb in the first two movies, you actually kind of believed it and understood their issues in this one, where Spock's, you know, like, hey, there's 200,000 Vulcans left. We need to start making more. I need to contribute my part. And, you know, apparently Vulcans can't stick it in a bucket and mail it home.
It's not a thing they do. Well, yeah. Okay. No, I think that can't be it. You know what? I'm going to say they can't do that because, you know, they're only active every 7 years, right? You got to plan that a little more thoroughly than the human male might.
But yeah, for me, the cast, I like that Kirk was actually coming to terms with the fact that he got into Starfleet for the wrong reasons. Like, he did it to live up to his dad's reputation. Now he's a captain, he's on a 5-year mission, and, you know, he doesn't feel like he's accomplishing much.
Well, he...
And wants, like, to take the desk job.
Well, and he starts with, you know, the movie kind of starts with the phrase, my life has become episodic. And that's a pretty hard lean on the fourth wall. But to have a character who is a TV show character say, hey, my life just kind of comes in weird little chunks, and I don't know how to process that, because the second I got it figured out, I have to deal with some new weird little chunk of life coming my way.
Yeah,
that's a great starting point for a character arc, and, you know, points to Peg and Young for sort of spotting that as a motivation for a character as arch as Captain Kirk. And then you put him up against a character that is explicitly the antithesis of what the Federation values. And I mean, he's big and dumb in a lot of ways, but just, you nailed the theme of Star Trek right down, where it's like, we can do better. And this guy says, no, you can't. And then they cooperate to do better, proving him wrong. And then they launch him into space. Plus, Idris Elba plays a charismatic space captain. And no movie where Idris Elba plays a charismatic space captain can be completely bad. Even if only the bit where Idris Elba is on screen being a charismatic space captain is the only worthwhile part of the movie. Ridley Scott. What, one day we'll get Idris Elba will get to be a really charming space captain, I hope.
Yeah, I mean, the characters were strong. The only issue I had with this movie, I think, was the villain, because there's like all these whole plot, huge glaring potholes in his plan. It's like, oh, We're trapped on this planet. Here's this easily controlled drone force you show at the end of that you go on it. We can't escape this planet. At the end of the movie, you escape the planet and go past the nebula.
Yeah, it's like you also pulled down like three different, apparently at least three different spaceships. Can't fix one of them and leave. Like there's not a great reason to keep to really convey that they're stranded.
Yeah, I mean the villain was, I think that it's the biggest thing about this reboot franchise is the villains have all been kind of weak. One was just Eric Bana screaming with a tattoo on his face. The two was just Khan. Like, it was just the worst parts of Khan. And then three, it's like, I'm an alien, but I'm not really an alien. And I have this weird vendetta. And I just, for me at least, that aspect of it was felt really, really weak to me. That's like the only downside I have about it. Because you could have had it where he was just you don't even have to make him an alien. You make him like a renegade captain, because you've had plenty of those in the original series, in Next Generation, in Voyager, and DS9. Even, well, not in Enterprise, because you only had two captains in Enterprise. But
although if you really wanted to tickle someone, you could have made Duchess the villain of the piece. I would have laughed. It's like Admiral Archer's completely clueless. You have to rein him in. How? I don't know. Nothing about him makes sense.
It just kind of irks me that like all three of these movies, it's been generic bad guy with his big black ship beats the shit out of the Enterprise. And in this case, it's not one big black ship. It's a big ass swarm of black little ships.
Oh, okay. So everyone tips the hat to Futurama when they claim the Beastie Boys are classical music, because that was a joke in an episode of Futurama where Fry has the last remaining can of anchovies. But the real hat tip to Futurama is the point where Chekhov and Spock technobabble the solution to disrupting the swarm. And then someone explains it with an easily understood analogy the line after, because that's from Where No Fan Has Gone Before. And I was in the theater and I golf clapped that. I was just like, congratulations, you are so Star Trek right now. And you know what? I sincerely think that was just fun. I fully surrendered to the madness of, okay, so we need to pump out a signal on VHF to disrupt this, because we're just interfering with the signal that controls the drones, right? You could use anything. You could just put out a high-pitched noise. But someone was like, no, we need to go. Kirk, someone was like, no, we're on the Enterprise. James C. Kirk is right there. We need to do this with style points. Play the Beastie Boys, please.
I will admit, as big as it dumb as was, it was fun.
Well, no.
That was a fun scene.
The fact that they shoot the curve of it like they're fucking surfing. Like, nothing about that makes sense. It's pure nonsense fun. And, you know, and there's goddamn John Cho at the helm. And he's tapping the beat on the dashboard. The way you do when the Beastie Boys comes on the radio. It's just a thing. Like, I can't be mad. I can't be like, no, this is idiotic. I'm just like, they went all out. They took a premise that is just like, yeah, okay, I'll buy that. That sounds reasonably that sounds like a reasonably plausible technological solution to this drone army. Let's just we just need to play radio at them. And then the Beastie Boys, and then they surf the wave of drones, and there's the entire crew tapping their feet to Sabotage.
And my personal favorite scene that I actually busted out laughing at was when they're like, "Oh, we got the signal," and then the big pulse wave comes off the station, and just they time it with the scream from the song.
Yeah, like you had to imagine. And I like the new character there, Isla.
Oh yeah, she's kind of fun.
She's cool. I liked her as like a character, and putting her and having Simon Pegg bounce off her is great. And it was just fun to have, you know, new characters who played her? Sophia Boutella. I've never heard of her.
I've not either.
Okay, she is French. That's why. But I just appreciate how committed to that silly bit they were. Just full out, like, that there it is, the USS Franklin shooting the curve, playing Beastie Boys. And it's, you know, like, I thought the motorcycle was going to be the thing that's like, okay, there's holograms and motorcycles, and I don't know what's going on, and this is as stupid as it could get. And that I was a little grumpy about, just because I'm like, okay, I appreciate the idea of having a bunch of holograms mess with the other guys, but why the motorcycle? You went a long way to get a motorcycle chase in this movie.
Yeah, there were a lot of just dumb, stupid, don't question it moments, but then there's like, you're in a ship in deep space. You're leading an expedition in uncharted territory, and you bring your BMX? Like, that was something that was in the with the crew on the Franklin.
Yeah,
that wasn't something that Kirk pulled out of the wreckage of the saucer out of his room. That was something that somebody in the Franklin 200 years beforehand.
They had to bring their motorcycle and also gasoline to run it, I guess? Or did they convert that for power cells? No, wait, it made the noises. Although it's
it made a combustion noise, so.
Although it's a pretty Star Trek-y thing to convert a motorcycle to run on power cells, but still have it make the noise, right?
I guess. I mean, the planet was apparently resource rich, so you could maybe pull that there was petroleum somewhere there.
I don't know. It's a long way from crude oil to gasoline to unleaded gasoline, but
we're arguing realism in a show where there's sounds in space, and you can surf a wave of enemy ships. So,
well, I will. If you told me Sulu was showing off at that point, I'd be like, yes, Sulu showing off. Why wouldn't Sulu show off? I took fencing as his combat elective.
It was fun. It was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. Because I was scared to death.
Oh, I was so ready for this to be Into Darkness 2, right? Just a big pile of stupid after stupid after stupid with you know, nothing but ham for acting, right?
Well, when all the rumors were coming out about the time travel bits, and then Kurtzman left, so it was just Orsi, and Orsi's like, you know what, I'll write and direct this. And then Paramount's just like, no. Not again. No. And he left, and, you know, Justin Lin is great at action set pieces. I had faith in Simon Pegg's writing, because he went whole hog into dumbness. He's very much on the record about how that is a bad Star Trek movie.
Well, I mean, he's one of us. He is one of those guys that if you point to him and say, hey, Peg is writing, has something to say, that means a lot. He is a Joss Whedon figure where if you point to him, that restores a lot of faith in the community, and that's kind of what Paramount needed at this point, right?
Pretty much.
And the fact that he and Jung turned out a great script, and that Justin Lin said, hey, I'm gonna have one crazy chase sequence and then make it about this surrogate family relationship. You know, he can do surrogate families and chase sequences, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I was a little worried when the first trailer came out. It looked like it's like, oh God, they didn't learn anything from Into Dumbness. But then the second trailer and then the third and all the TV spots is like, okay, you guys have my attention now. I'll be honest. I'm somebody who was raised on both Star Trek and Star Wars on equal measure. Like, I could alternate between watching the original Star Wars trilogy and the Spock trilogy from the original series movies.
You know, the good four Star Trek movies, right?
Pretty much, yeah. And, you know, I wasn't one of those ones that, you know, it would be, oh, this week I'm really into Star Trek. Okay, this week I'm really into Star Wars. You know, it was one of those things. And Star Wars, when it came out with Episode 7, felt like a return to form because the prequels were very alien to me. And
it is funny how much it feels more like Star Wars when you just put the Millennium Falcon back in, right?
Right. But then you also, like, new Trek, with the 2009 movie, it was dumb and fun, and I kind of give it the benefit of the doubt because this is the crew's new beginnings. Like, their timeline has been fucked up, and they're all now classmates together, pretty much. And I thought, okay, 09 is a great launching pad.
You could run with this. You've got this in place, and, you know, we'll see.
And then they made these promises of all new adventures. We're not going to rehash anything. And then you made Space Seed again.
Worse. You didn't just remake Space Seed. You did it bad.
Yeah.
And I'm not asking for a lot for someone remaking Space Seed, because Space Seed isn't much of an episode.
No, but I mean, they kept promising, oh, original stories. Hey, we're just going to redo this again. And then with 3, it's something completely original. And I liked that. It's like, keep this up. Bring new stuff. Make it feel like Star Trek. And bring new things to the playing field. I don't know how that's going to change the cast with Anton Yelchin's unfortunate death.
You know, okay, I'm going to say something mildly sacrilegious here. Chekhov is a character added in Season 3 of Star Trek, the original series. The season that's not good. I'm not going to say that he was, you know, a completely worthless addition to the series, because who knows where they might have gone later on. But it's a big cast, and you got to get everyone in the movie, and that's hard sometimes, is all I'm saying. Maybe we don't need the Chekhov in the next one.
Well, I'm pretty sure they'll just have it that's like, oh, Chekhov was transferred to the Reliant.
Some kind of car. They're putting him on a bus, right? They're putting pretty him much, on the space bus, and, you know, nice wave.
Yeah. So I would really like to see Isla become a more permanent member of the crew.
Well, that's weirdly fortunate, right? That's weirdly fortunate that we have someone new introduced in the movie who could fill that spot in the cast. Okay, so apparently they are doing okay. There is another one in rolling on. Chris Hemsworth is going to be in it, so I guess it's time travel. It's time travel.
I just hope
it is the fourth Star Trek movie. They need to do time travel.
I mean, at least it's going back to save Chris Hemsworth and.
Not some crap lousy whales that no one gives a crap about.
Hey guys, whales!
Yeah, and Abrams has said they're putting Chekhov on a space bus.
I kind of figured as much.
I don't know. They could have tried to recast it, but there we go. I'm down for this. So this is the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. This is what we got. A pretty good movie. Way better than what we got on the 35th anniversary of Star Trek. Which was nothing, right? We got nothing for that, right? Or did we get something stupid with Enterprise? I can't remember.
Wait, 35th, I thought, was TNG era.
No, that would have been 30th. That was when got...
Yeah, that was Relics. That was Relics.
We got Relics and whatever the... And Trouble with Tribbles, right?
That was the 35th.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was the 35th, because I remember that happened 5 years later.
Okay, so 35th was half good, because we got a fun episode of Deep Space Nine, and a terrible episode of Voyager, as is the norm. Before I, I would like to say that before the end of the calendar year, we are going to talk some more Star Trek. I'd like to do an episode about Next Gen, at least, because I've finally digested enough of my rewatch from earlier in the year to have some things to say.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be down for that. I'll be honest, when growing up, I hated Next Gen because I grew up on the original series movies and everything, so it's like, that's not my Enterprise. But, you know, as an adult, it's like, okay, it's growing on me. I understand it a lot better than I did as a kid.
Oh, 35th anniversary was also the year of Star Trek Nemesis.
Then, wait, okay, so then that means Trials and Tribulations
was 30th.
And the Voyager episode were 30th.
Yeah.
That means Relics would have been the 25th.
Okay.
Yeah, so, no, we did not get anything for the 35th. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that didn't happen. That didn't happen at all. So that was Star Trek Beyond. It's pretty good.
Yeah, quite enjoyable.
Yeah, that's about it. Like, I mean, if you're asking me to put it in the grand stack of, you know, the big whiteboard of good start of the Star Trek movie ranking, probably next to 4. Probably in there, that range.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd probably put it in about the same spot.
Yeah, next to 4. Just fun. So, thank you for listening. Have a good time. Catch you next way around.
Bye.
God, I thought this smelled bad. On the outside.
Thank you for listening. I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported International License. Visit our website, sblpodcast.com, for more episodes, contact information, social media links, and if you could be so kind as to, please subscribe and rate our show on your podcasting app of choice.